Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of the Overthinking Podcast. Today, I am here with a very special guest, Patrice from the Bliss Bean.
Thank you for having me, and you pronounced my name perfectly, which is awesome.
I practiced a bit. I was like on your Instagram bio, and I was like, all right, let's get this right. So glad it paid off. For anyone who is not familiar with you and your content, which you all definitely should be, do you want to kind of introduce yourself, talk about what you do?
Sure. So my YouTube channel is called The Bliss Bean. A lot of people ask me why I named it that. It's a long story. When I first started blogging and like making stuff on the internet, I was really interested in food. So my Instagram, if you scroll all the way to the beginning of it, was basically just food photos. So I kind of wanted to combine a word that meant happiness and then a word for a food. And then bean is also the first three letters of my first name and the first letter of my last name. So that's how the Bliss Bean came about. But as I was making YouTube videos, I realized that what I was really interested in was making content about like planning and organization and productivity. So that was what it shifted into, and that is still what I do to this day. Some of the most popular topics on my channel are things like journaling, how to plan out your week. Sometimes I will do like a productive day in the life kind of thing. And recently I started college as well, so my content is probably gonna shift towards that as well. So yeah, planning and organization is usually how I describe it in the like elevator pitch when someone asks me what my channel is about.
Well, Patrice is extremely talented. I was like thinking about how long I've been following along with your stuff, and I think it's like literally 2 years or something. Like I've been, following along with the Bliss Bean for quite a minute. So I recommend. We are going to get into our highs and lows of the week. Do you have an idea of yours? Do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I guess a lot of my life has been focused around the new classes that I've been having. So my high is that I love this one class. It's called Communication Foundations. And it sounds, I don't know, the name of it sounds kind of boring. Like you think it's just an intro foundation class, but the professor is amazing. She's so engaging. And some people complain that she talks too fast. But I think I also have a tendency to talk too fast, so we're like on the same wavelength, and I love that I'm sort of on the edge of my seat the whole time, and I don't tune out the way I do in other classes. I have another class called Globalization that is really, really boring, so I guess that's my low. But usually I do use that class to just get other work done, so I can't complain that much. That's like my productivity efficiency part of me showing through.
That's great. All right. My high of my week is that I got to go to the Netherlands last weekend, and it was so nice. I went to Amsterdam and The Hague, which are just such cool places. I'd never been to that country before, so new country for me. Mm-hmm. Very nice. My low of the week is I'm honestly just, like, exhausted. I've had such a packed week and weekend that I'm, like, I just need sleep. It's been fun. It's because of good plans, but, oh my god, running low. Anyway, guys, all of Patrice's stuff will be linked in the description. I mean, literally, you have, what, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, a newsletter, a podcast of your own. Like, what don't you do? So,
go check her out. It's too much, honestly.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
But let's get into our first kind of subcategory, which is Spain. You've just moved to Spain, what, like a couple weeks, a month ago? How long has it been?
Yeah, so I actually got to Spain at the very end of July with my family, and then we did a road trip for a little over a month. We went around Spain and Portugal, and then they dropped me off in Segovia, which is a small city about an hour and a half drive away from Madrid. So I've been in Segovia for about a month now.
Okay, great. Yeah. So as a fellow American living abroad, I can totally understand like the stress or just like general emotions that arise with moving somewhere. So I know that you spent some time in Spain before this, right?
Mm-hmm. I took a gap year in 2019 and I lived with a host family in Madrid for a month. So I was a little familiar, but still lots of new things.
Yeah, so how are you currently feeling about your situation? Is it a little less overwhelming now? Are you still kind of getting used to everything?
Yeah, I think the fact that I lived in Spain for a month and I traveled for 2 months total in that gap year in 2019, I feel like I got most of the homesickness out of my system during that trip. Because I remember that trip was very rough for me, especially in the beginning. I remember the first few days of that trip, I was in Lisbon and like spending the whole day going around meeting people, so I was too busy to feel the homesickness. But then when I arrived to Madrid and like moved into my bedroom with the host family, and I was just alone for the first time and it got quiet, and then I was like, oh no, what have I done? Because then it hits you that you can't just go downstairs and see your family and that they're so far away. So I cried a lot, went through a lot of homesickness, even through to the end of the trip, I was really missing home. But then here, I was really sad in the days leading up to my family leaving because you're just anticipating how much your daily life will change. But then as soon as they left and I was on my own, like this became the new normal and I felt totally fine. So I think getting that practice with being on my own helped with that adjustment. I feel like I've been settling in quite nicely. The only annoying thing is all the documents that you have to take care of. But just yesterday, or the day before, I had a call with like a consulting lawyer type person who's gonna help me, and she literally was telling me about one of the first steps to getting my residency or whatever is to set up a bank account, and she said you don't need your NIA, which is the like identification number for span people residing in Spain. I don't need that to get a bank account, but sometimes the bank will require it, but they're not supposed to. So she was like, if they do that to you, just like call me up and I will talk to them for you. And I was so relieved because it's so stressful dealing with things on your own. So I was like,
For sure.
it's so good to just have someone's number in my phone. Literally call her. She knows everything. She knows the rules. She speaks Spanish and she'll just take care of it for me.
Yeah, exactly. I know what you mean. Having like kind of just one person who can help you figure things out is such a stress reliever for those first steps. I'm sure that you're handling and dealing with a lot of change right now. And in one of your videos, you said that you haven't been to school in 2.5 years and now you're back, right? Is that
Yeah,
how long it's
so
been?
it's been that long. I took
Dang.
one gap year, like sort of intentionally. I traveled and did all the cool gap year things, and then I was supposed to start university in 2020. But then the pandemic began, and my YouTube channel was doing a lot better, so I figured instead of like taking online classes and having a difficult, boring time, I might as well just stay home and work on YouTube for another year. So that was what I did. Two gap years equaled about 2.5 years with no school, which is kind of weird now. I mean, I got into classes pretty easily, that wasn't a problem. But the age difference is kind of weird. Like, people will ask me, oh, how old are you? And I say, I'm turning 21 in 2 months. And they're like, 21? Because there are some
21.
17-year-olds here. So that's the only thing that's made it weird. Otherwise, transitioning back to school has been easy.
That's nice. Yeah. So have things in Segovia like met your expectations, or have you had any like big shocks, like cultural wise, or just like your situation, things that you weren't expecting?
I think everything has exceeded the expectations. I love my student residence. That was very important to me. When I got here and first toured it, I was so excited to live here. And I think that's just an important thing for me, and I'm sure for many people, just feeling comfortable in your home environment. And then Segovia itself has been a lot nicer than I thought it would be. I really thought I'd be living in like a village. I thought if I needed to buy clothing, I'd need to go to Madrid. But we actually have everything we need here. It's not nearly as small as I thought it would be, and there's still a lot of it that I have yet to explore. And it's just so beautiful. I was also worried that it would be very, like, when we were first driving into Segovia for the first time, it just seemed like mountains and deserts and very dry, no greenery. But once you actually get into Segovia, there's a lot of trees and parks and like beautiful hills. So that has been amazing. Maybe the only thing that hasn't met my expectations is, I guess just like the classes. I thought I would feel more engaged in my classes and enjoy them more, but I guess because it's the very first semester, it's a lot of intro foundation courses that have just been pretty boring so far.
Yeah, okay. Well, sorry to hear that, but I'm glad that you're enjoying your surroundings at least. Whenever I told people that I was moving to Germany or that I live in Germany, the very first question that people ask me is like, "So do you speak German?" So I hate to project that onto you, but what's your like understanding of Spanish? Because I watched one video of yours where you did it all in Spanish and I was kind of blown away. You sounded like fluent, but is that how much you speak, or did you have to really think through that video?
So everyone asked me, first of all, how did I learn Spanish? So I took
Yeah.
Spanish classes for a few years in middle school and high school. I took AP Spanish, and then I lived with the host family for a month, which was very helpful. And then before coming to university, I took some online classes, like group online classes with a tutor to just help me prepare. I would say my level of Spanish is pretty good. Like, I can talk to people. I don't need to talk in Spanish to anyone at the university for the most part. All of the classes are in English, all of the conversations with students are in English. It's when I go into the city and like go to any kind of store or restaurant or like talk to the people who work at the residence, anything like that, where I need Spanish.
Yeah.
I would say that video that you mentioned, mainly the preparation that I needed to do was finding vocab. I think vocab is my weak point. I feel confident about grammar and just being able to have conversations in general. It's just that I feel like there are so many words missing from my vocabulary, so I always have Spanish dicked up, and hopefully living in Spain will help me with that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's good to hear. So kind of moving on, in a video that you uploaded maybe a bit over a month ago, which I loved watching, by the way, it was titled "This Past Year Was the Worst." You said that you told yourself things will get better when you start college, like mentally. And has that proven to be true? Like, are you feeling a bit better? Are you feeling more excited about things?
Oh, I love that you brought this video up. I was showing my YouTube channel to someone here, and they saw that thumbnail and they were like, "Oh, huh, like this past year was the worst. Was that clickbait?" And I was like, "No, not really. It was kind of the worst, actually."
No.
So what I was referring to in that video was just, I would say starting from like summer of 2020, having a lot of difficulties with, and I explained in the video that I hesitate to call it depression because I was never formally diagnosed, so I don't want to really use that term, but I didn't know how else to describe it because it felt like a very different state of being. Like I describe it as a switch would flip, and I would feel very low energy, like crying, can't bring myself to do anything. So I would have episodes of that on and off for the past like 1.5 years. So that was why the past year was the worst, as I said. And I felt like a big part of that was the fact that I was at home for so long. And obviously there were aspects of that that were very nice. I love my family and I loved spending time with them, but just being in the same environment, literally never leaving because I worked from home, I wasn't going to school, and my parents worked from home, my brother was studying from home, everything was just so consistent day to day. I felt like that was contributing to my struggles, and so I was really hopeful that once I came to Spain, there would just be so many new things happening that that would no longer happen. And it has happened a little bit. Like, I've had a few bad mental health days, but it's been a lot better than at home. I would say, like, the quote unquote episodes have not lasted longer than 2 days while I'm here. And I've sort of been able to notice why it's happening as well. Like, I noticed that on Sundays, which is the only day that we don't have meals served at the cafeteria, I have a tendency to just like stay in my room the whole day, and that's when I start to kind of get into my own head and not feel great, but then I feel better as soon as I'm going to classes again. So things have gotten better, not 100% better, and I think it's important to never expect that like one single thing or change in your life is gonna fix 100% of your situation. But things have gotten better, and I can only be grateful for that.
That's great. Yeah, okay. Very good to hear. I felt like one of the reasons that that video was so cool to watch is because when people come to the Bliss Bean, right? it's kind of, I mean, your general vibe is like productivity, mindfulness, whether it's, journaling or organization or just like habits you can incorporate into your own life. It's like it's a good thing to portray, but at the same time, you're a human. So it was nice to kind of be like that really real, raw side of like you're still a person with feelings. And it's, I feel like the entire culture of the internet has changed. And what people are searching for is kind of that relatable, like, oh, it's, I'm not alone in this. And if I feel this way, there are other people that I look up to experiencing the same thing. So it was so cool to watch.
It's been very interesting kind of seeing that shift on social media. And I've also seen it, I think it's kind of reflected in the way that, I don't know, maybe different photography styles have become popular on Instagram. Because I remember years ago, like the big bloggers on Instagram were the ones who did like, photo shoots with professional cameras and everything was very staged. And now that content just does not perform well. Now it seems like the accounts that do the best on Instagram or the content that does the best is the ones that look like they were just shot on an iPhone, like taken straight from the camera roll, very spur of the moment, spontaneous and realistic. So I've enjoyed seeing that. And it's also been difficult for me to try and be or like learn how to be authentic on camera because it's not as easy as just being like, oh, I'm gonna be authentic on camera and like there we
For
go.
sure.
It's
For
so
sure.
hard to like for that video, I wanted to include footage of myself during those episodes, but like when I felt like that, I had no desire to pick up my camera and film
Of
anything.
course.
So I had very little footage to actually like show what it was like during those times. So that was like a big barrier to me showing that side of my life because I just didn't feel like filming that side of my life. It took more effort. But people have also been commenting that like it seems they say that it seems like my personality shows through more in videos these days. Which makes me happy, and I can kind of see that as well. Because for the longest time, I felt like it was really hard to behave in videos the way that I did with my friends in real life.
For
And
sure.
that's finally kind of starting to come together. So that's exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure, definitely. A couple weeks ago, me and Carmen were talking to, are you familiar with Unjaded Jade?
Yes, very.
Yeah, so she's super cool, but she was kind of saying that she feels like when COVID occurred, the kind of entire mindset of like people who, what do you call them? Viewers, followers, like consumers, content consumers?
Yeah,
I don't know.
sure.
But the content that people were seeking was more of like a realistic, just not average, but just real lifestyle rather than this whole like celebrity influencer thing. Because when our lives became less normal in one way or another, everyone was just kind of seeking that realness and like just a average reality. So when people put out something that's genuine nowadays, I feel like that's received much better and people appreciate it a lot more because our lives have, I mean, kind of everyone's life has changed quite a bit in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think people
Anyway.
really like that, just like window into someone's life. I was talking to my mom about this because I was telling her about like Instagram engagement rates and stuff because I think she was showing me accounts and being like, look how many followers this person has. And I was like, no, we have to look at what their engagement rate is. The follower count like isn't the only thing that matters. And so then she was really surprised to see at like how some of the really big accounts actually were getting very little engagement. And so we were kind of having a conversation about that, how like these accounts just aren't really showing any of the real life behind the scenes. And I think that isn't resonating with people anymore.
For sure. So yeah, back to the video that we were originally talking about. On a maybe lighter note, you also included footage from your trip to New York City, which is just like one of my favorite places. So let's just talk about that for a minute, because I visited New York City like literally a week apart from you. Like I feel like I just missed you, and I just want to hear how was it. It seems like such a nice ending to like that whole summer, so it seemed really cool.
Yes. It was amazing. I look back on it with like such fond memories. I think we only went for maybe 5 days, but I think the interesting thing about that trip is that almost the entire summer I had like on my bucket list, I wanted to visit another city with friends before I left for Spain. And in the back of my mind, I was always like, oh, New York City would be so cool. But like, I'd settle for other big cities as well. I'm fine with other ones. And then this opportunity arose that was literally perfect. Like, a group of friends that I mean, just two other friends that I knew really well. We loved, like, our traveling styles, I feel like, just fit really well. It was perfect for my schedule. It was New York City, like the city at the top of my bucket list. Everything was just ideal. And I don't know, it was just really nice to get out of Madison, Wisconsin, and finally take like a post-COVID trip. I love planning trips, so I really got to do a lot of that and like save all the places that we wanted to visit and eat and stuff. And I don't know, there's just something so special about traveling with friends, because up until now, the majority of my trips have been with my family, and as I said, I love my family, but it gets a little tiring traveling with them sometimes. And with friends, it's just so fun.
Yeah, it seemed really nice. Gotta love New York, honestly. So, our next subcategory is circling around videos and content creation, and I did some research, scrolled down to the bottom of your channel, and you kind of started YouTube. I didn't watch the videos, but I looked at how long they were up for, and it was like 3 or 3.5 years. So you've had that public presence on YouTube for quite a while. How do you feel about that? Like, what changes have you seen and experienced?
So I started doing YouTube in April 2018. I have some videos prior to that uploaded on my channel, but they were just like travel videos that I did and needed a place to upload. The first video that I did seriously was like 40 Facts About Me or something, and once I uploaded that, that was like the start of the Blissbean officially. So yeah, it's been 3.5 years approximately. A lot of different emotions like go on throughout that process of being of doing the same thing for so long. I guess one thing I've realized is that when my YouTube channel started to really grow in March of 2020, I was so excited and I was just like, oh, this is great. Like, it's gonna be infinite growth from here on out, which is obviously not how it is. And so what was very disappointing was the first time that like my views and revenue and everything went down for the first month. And I realized that, I mean, I don't think anyone's YouTube journey is just a consistent up and up, but I realized that I needed to be okay with things not always increasing, and that didn't mean that like, oh, it's over. Like, there's always going to be periods of ups and downs. And I see that with my favorite YouTubers, so I should know that like my channel is not going to be the exception to that. Everyone goes through this. I guess another common thread that I often think about is like comparisonitis on YouTube. So this is something that I talked about in one of my very first podcast episodes, is the fact that I basically stopped watching YouTube when I started my YouTube channel. Part of that was just sometimes I would watch videos and really admire people's editing and filming, but now that I had my own channel, it was comparisonitis, and I felt like, oh, why am I not that good? Why are my videos not that good? And then also like unintentional plagiarism really scares me. I'm really afraid of like having my style influenced by something that someone else does and just copying someone else's ideas, even if it's not intentional and like subconsciously doing it. Because I used to watch Best Dressed's channel a lot before she got popular, which I'm very proud of. But I loved her editing style, and I'm sure some of that seeped into my videos. And I did get a comment that was like, oh, you can tell that she watches Best Dressed. And I don't know, that really hit me hard. I was like, oh, I can't watch her anymore because people will think
Oh
that I'm
no.
copying her. I feel
Oh
like
God.
now I'm starting to lean back towards, okay, I need to watch YouTube just to get inspired and like see what other people are doing, because sometimes I do feel very like isolated, like I'm just creating in a bubble and I don't know what trends topic-wise or aesthetic-wise are going on elsewhere in the YouTube world. So I need to get back into watching it, but yeah, that's been an interesting thing to deal with.
Yeah, definitely. You keep like answering all the questions I have, like you're doing such a good job, but
Oh.
One of them was obviously like the Bliss Bean. How did you come to that name? Which you explained, but I
Yes.
did just want to say it has a very nice like ring to it. It's very memorable. Memorable? Yeah,
Oh,
so
thank you.
you can check that off the list. And then you did mention that you had some pretty like consistent growth around end of 2019, start of 2020. What opportunities and like feelings did that create for you? Like obviously I'm sure you were then approached by brands or just like having a larger following and you know things were going up, so I'm sure that that obviously created some emotions and thoughts. What was that like for you?
I just have very good memories of like so March 2020 was when for whatever reason the algorithm like blessed me and everything started going up. I was very happy. It was very fun to be making videos and finally like knowing that a large amount of people are actually going to watch those videos, 'cause really for a long time I was like doing the YouTube grind and nothing was happening. I think the first year of making videos, I probably gained like 200 subscribers, I believe. So it was very slow in the beginning and a lot of fun when it started growing. Brands started reaching out to me for the first time, and that was pretty much around when I started doing my first sponsored videos. Looking back, I regret that I guess didn't talk to other creators to know what rates they were charging, number one. But maybe even just like I should have started working with like an influencer agency to manage things for me right from the get-go, because now knowing the rates that I get and knowing what I was charging then, like I was getting even more views then than I am now. I was severely undervaluing myself. So that's like my advice for creators who are starting out is like once you start getting sponsorships, they're gonna try and take advantage of you, so know what you're worth. Working with an agency can be a valuable investment because even though they take a percentage cut, like personally, I now make more from sponsored videos even after their cut just because they're so much better at negotiating than I am, and it saves me a lot of time and energy. I already talked about like when it started going down. That was definitely a big disappointment, but I had to learn how to deal with that. Like, I remember telling my dad about the numbers going down, and he was like, "Oh, did they go down by like half? Did they get cut in half?" And I said, "No, they only went down a little bit." And he was like, "Oh, okay, so then like chill. It's not a problem." So it's always good to talk to someone else to like bring you down to earth.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh my God. Rates are so stressful. Like, I just don't understand. So that's.
This industry is
Anyway,
such a
so.
mess because a lot of people don't talk about it. Every time I've talked to another creator, I've been surprised. And so the more of those conversations happen, like the more fairly we can be paid for our work. Because otherwise, if you are, like I said, creating in a bubble, this also applies to this, is that if you're just communicating with one brand and you don't know what else is going on outside, they will try to get that rate to the rock bottom, and you won't even know that you're actually, that your work is actually worth a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. Someone one of like the only creators who like publicly talks about her like monetization, how much she makes from YouTube or just like brand work, who I don't watch often, but is very nice, is Kelly Stamps. Do you know her?
Yes, I was talking about her recently with someone.
Yeah, okay. So it was honestly really helpful like a year ago when she started talking about how much she makes or like monetizing her videos and how she like just incorporates different methods and with brands and with her editing style. It was just nice to finally hear from someone who was doing it like, "Oh, here's some tips and tricks," because I feel like so many people are so reluctant to talk about it, which makes sense in
Yes.
some ways, but in other ways it's also kind of like help, like other people are seeking that mentorship.
No, I was talking about this with someone about like, is it bad to share those numbers on the internet? Because some people think that's not a good thing to do for some reason. I disagree. I think we need a lot more transparency. Just, I don't know, overall on the topic of money, but especially in the influencer space. And if people don't like seeing that content, like just don't click on those videos. But I think for the people who do need to know, like how much should I be charging, those videos like Kelly Stamps are so helpful. And I would also recommend Lynn Truong did a video as well where she detailed exactly how much she gets paid for brand deals. I did one a while back, but that was like a year ago, so it's kind of outdated. Maybe I would do another one. And Ali Abdaal, I know, is also very open, but his situation is kind of different because rather than just being an influencer, he also does like courses and Skillshare stuff and things like that. But yeah, there's definitely people out there who are sharing very honest behind the scenes looks into how the influencer world looks.
Totally. Okay. So, moving on, as I said earlier, you already have a public presence on YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, your blog, podcast, a newsletter, the list continues. But your maybe most recent project is your book, which is so cool. And that is publishing in 2 days, right?
2 days, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, by the time this episode goes up, your book will be published, which is cool to think about, right? I want to hear
Yeah.
about your like writing process, inspiration, how much time, like just go ahead and talk about it.
Sure. So they reached out to me last year. Yeah, I keep forgetting what year it is. They reached out to me last year and I was very excited. We first talked about ideas for what the topic of the book could be, and I considered a few things. I know one of my ideas was to make something about gap years, because I was, as someone who took 2 gap years and found that experience really valuable, I've also been kind of involved with the Gap Year Association, so I'm definitely passionate about explaining to people why gap years are a really great option to take. And another idea was just like about starting a YouTube channel and advice for that, because I also love teaching people about that on my channel. But then finally we settled on just like a planning and organization book, because it would be applicable to most people, whereas like the gap year audience or the content creator audience is just a small subset of the people who watch my videos. So planning and organization would apply to everyone. So I just wanted to share all of the tips and best techniques that I've picked up along the way for things like planning and organization and setting up habits and routines, things like time tracking, which I talk a lot about on my channel, weekly planning routines, etc. It was a really interesting experience. I think I spent about 4 months working on it, which actually isn't that long. But it was a very up and down kind of process. Like sometimes I'd be very inspired. Sometimes I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. So it definitely got stressful at times, and it was a lot of imposter syndrome because I just didn't feel qualified to write a book. But like the publisher reached out to me, so I guess they thought that I was. And people have been buying it, so I guess they think that I am as well. But yeah, it's been really weird, especially like meeting new people here at college. I mean, first of all, when they find out about my YouTube channel, that's kind of weird, because then they have like this place they can go to watch videos of me spanning back like 4 years. But then also when they find out about the book, that also, I don't know, just makes me feel weird. Just having a public presence and then introducing that public presence to people that I've recently met. But yeah, I'm excited about the book coming out. I still haven't received my copies. I think that's because I'm in Spain now, so the shipping takes way longer. I think I was supposed to have it a few weeks ago, but I haven't been able to
My
physically hold it
goodness.
myself. So hopefully that'll happen soon. And yeah, once it arrives, I'm very excited. And once everyone else starts getting their copy, if they ordered a physical one, I'm very excited to start seeing that on social media and like sharing everyone's stories and
Yeah.
stuff.
Oh my God, for sure. That's so cool. What you said about the whole having a public presence thing. I can relate so hard. Literally, like, because if I meet people, right, like, I don't know, at a party or at a friend of a friend, whatever, and they follow me on Instagram, I have like the one blurry picture on their feed to get to know them, and they have like a collection of 300 videos
Yes.
dating back to 4 years ago of like, it's just such a weird concept to me, something I
I
still
know.
can't fully comprehend, although I've been doing it for such a long time.
Do you have another Instagram account, like a personal or private one?
I do, yeah, but the thing is, so many. I only created it a couple months ago because I was like, I'm just gonna try and detach my personal life from my public life for a while. But a lot of my friends have like tagged me in posts, and then they see that, and it's hard to completely wipe that. Or if I unfollow my friends like on my public account and follow them on private, they're like, "Why did you unfollow me?" I'm like, "I'm sorry, I'm trying to detach." So it's been an interesting journey, but
I
gotta be
don't
proud of
have
what you make, and then it's not bad.
I don't have a personal account because I know that I would just never use it. Like, I feel like
Yeah.
updating my Blissbean account takes enough energy for me. I would never post anything on the personal one, so there's just no point to me in having it. I do, the only, I guess, separation that I have between my public and personal life when having the same account for both is I love that they added like the primary and the general DM inbox so
Oh
that
my
like I
God,
can have the
yeah.
conversations with people I know, but then everyone else that DMs me on a daily basis, I can just keep that separated. But yeah, otherwise I have no like desire to have a personal account, but it is a little awkward when I need to follow someone that I just met at college and they're like, "Whoa, you have 35,000 followers, you're famous." I'm like, it's fine, just like just let's not talk about it.
For sure. Something that you actually really inspired me to do, it was you and this one other creator, is you were so good at responding to DMs, and not just like they liked the message or like thank you, like you would really take the time to like write something back personally. And I remember the first time I like mentioned you on my story or wrote you something, you would always respond with like a lot of like a very mindful response, and I could just see that through the screen. So I was like, it would be weird to think that people would look up to me, but if they did, then maybe I want to start sorting through these requested DMs and writing back. But I can relate about the general and primary thing. It is probably one of my favorite Instagram features.
Absolutely. Sometimes they incorporate features I absolutely hate, but sometimes once in a while they do something good.
For real, for real. Okay, so let's move on to Instagram questions from the like questionnaire on the podcast
Ooh,
story.
fun. I forgot about that.
I know it is. It's always like my favorite part. So, the first one is, do you have any tips for being productive despite stress?
I feel like some variation of that question is just the most popular thing for people to ask. I know it sounds like it doesn't relate, but I'm always talking about time blocking, and I feel like for me that's the answer to like every question, is that when I'm in a stressed state, I feel like it's harder to make good decisions. Like if you're just in the moment and you're like, okay, I'm super stressed out, I have a lot to do, what should I work on next? It's not gonna end well. I for me at least. Like all my brain wants to do is just switch off and I just don't have that decision-making power to be productive or to decide what to work on. And so for me, time blocking is so powerful because I just did it today, right before this interview. I did my weekly planning and like sometimes it's a bore and it takes a long time. But I have basically my entire week planned out and what I'm gonna work on. And just eliminating that decision making and being able to wake up every day, starting from Monday, and be like, okay, here's my plan for the day. This is what I'm gonna work on. And even down to the hour, like knowing, okay, from like after class, from 3 to 4, I'm gonna be writing this newsletter, etc. That removes so much of the stress for me because I start the week knowing that there is time for me to get everything done. It's all on my calendar. I don't have to like keep track of it in my head or worry about whether I'll run out of time because I've already done the math. I know that it works out and that if I just stay on schedule, it's gonna be a good week. So, yeah, I guess basically what I'm trying to say is like when you're in a stress state and you're overwhelmed, like try to cut down on the amount of decisions you have to make, whether that is time blocking, making a list and putting it in order of what you're going to work on, minimizing the decisions that you make for other things, like I don't know what you're going to wear or what you're going to eat. If your brain is really overloaded, just try to stick to your routines and what feels easiest for you. And just know that all stress is temporary.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. What surprises me is that With, like, I've tried time blocking. I've tried quite a lot of things to reduce stress, but the only thing that's worked for me is using Notion, which may be a controversial topic, because I did see that you weren't a fan of Notion, which, hit me hard, but it's okay. Anyway, I always make like a daily to-do list of everything I have to do, but with no specific like time, And then by the time I check off all of those things, that's when I can finally relax. Like that's when I can like take the weight off my shoulders because I'm like, I've done everything I need to do. With time blocking for me, it's like, this is what I need to do right now. But if I as much as like sidestep a bit or like miss this deadline, like day's ruined. So it's funny how that differs from person to person. But since you come off as such like an intentional and like put together human on the internet, do you ever get like overwhelmed or burnt out from like constantly like just planning things out, or does that have the opposite effect for you?
I would say it has the opposite effect. So on the topic of like time blocking not working for you, that's why I always emphasize like you can't just copy everything that I do and think that it's gonna work great for you because everyone needs a different method. So people, I got an email recently where someone said like, "Oh, time tracking really stresses me out. So how should I do it?" And I was like, "If it really stresses you out, then you shouldn't do it." Like
Don't do it.
for me, it has the opposite effect because I don't know, it just makes me really aware of and intentional with how I spend my time. So it works great for me, but I'm not gonna recommend something to 100% of people. And that includes time blocking. Because for me, I'm very much the opposite where I'm like, I might schedule in like a break in the afternoon or a break around dinner time. And then I can like fully enjoy that break because I know that I have time blocked for doing other tasks
I
later.
see, I
So,
see.
yeah. So it affects
Okay.
everyone differently. What was the original question for this section?
It was first how to be productive despite stress, but then I tied in another question about do you ever feel burnt out or overwhelmed from just.
So I don't know if it counts as burnout or overwhelm, but like the stuff I talked about experiencing for the past year and a half, some people have commented like, "Oh, you're probably just burned out and stressed," but like I always want people to remember that it's really hard to really know what's going on in a person's life just from the tiny sliver that they share on the internet. So personally, I don't feel that I got burned out because when I got back into working, that was when I would start to feel better and just excited about life again. I definitely get stressed sometimes, but currently, I'm in a situation where things are pretty fine. Homework is manageable, YouTube is manageable, so I'm feeling good. I guess the only thing along those lines that I experience is sometimes I just like get tired, and for me that happens mostly when I'm filming. Like days when I'm filming exhaust me, and then by the end of that, my brain is just not working. But because I know that that's how I'll feel, I can like schedule in lots of time for filming so I don't feel rushed, not have much else to do that day. Just the more I get to know myself, I guess, and how I work, the more I can avoid that stress.
For sure, for sure. All right. So, next question is, what reasons did you have for starting a YouTube channel? Like, was there one in particular, or was it just you thought it would be fun?
I've been super interested in making things and just like putting them on the internet since I was little. But I would say I really got interested in blogging in seventh grade because for our language arts class, we had to make a blog just to share our writing assignments. But then I got very excited about this assignment. I kept like going to my teacher and asking if I could do like any extra blog posts we did were extra credit technically. So I would be like, "Can I do this blog post and this blog post?" Because I started finding other bloggers my age who were doing really cool and creative things. And so I just like dove headfirst into that world. And I had a blog that I was pretty serious about like in eighth grade. And then when I started high school, I kind of restarted that. And I took a video class. And I was also doing an internship where I was producing like short documentary videos, and I absolutely loved that format. So I was like, why not combine blogging and video and just give this YouTube thing a try? I actually did a video where I was reading through my old journal entries, and I found the entry where I was writing about like, oh, today I was talking to my dad about maybe I should start a YouTube channel. I really like this idea. Maybe I should do that. And it was so cool to pinpoint literally when all of this started. And very shortly after that entry, I actually made the first video. And then I've already explained how I started. So the rest is history.
No. So cool. Oh my gosh. Okay. Sorry, I'm scrolling through all the questions. So many of these are just like, oh my God, so exciting. Can't wait. Okay.
That's not what the box is for, guys.
It's sweet, but wrong place. Okay, this is kind of a big question. But what would you say defines you as an individual as well as a content creator?
Wow.
I can give you a minute to dissect that one.
Loading. I feel like just generally optimism is a important part of my brand, and I've sort of adopted it as like a personal brand as well, not just for the Bliss Bean. One thing that I think has stuck with me throughout my life is something my dad would say. Like I'm not very superstitious, but he would often say like if something happened that was not so great, like it was supposed to happen that way, and that like something better is gonna happen as a result of it. Like that's the general gist. And he would say that so much that it got really kind of ingrained in my mind and the way that I approached life. So I guess like how you've said the Bliss Bean kind of radiates that positive energy and stuff like that. And I feel like in real life I'm kind of like that as well. I don't know. I think I'm pretty good at going with the flow on things and trying to look at the positive side of stuff. I guess productivity is also a part of my self and identity, but with that, I don't know if that's a good thing. I've definitely had to, like, in the past year and a half when I was struggling with my mental health, and oftentimes my productivity was at zero. That was a process of like unraveling my identity from productivity and figuring out what defined me when I was just like lying on the couch and watching TV for a week and literally not doing anything. Like, who am I when I'm not the overachieving, overachieving, striving for awards and accomplishments kind of person? So yeah, productivity has been a part of my identity, but something that I would like to work on, kind of detaching myself from, but deep down, I guess more of it is just like optimism towards life in general.
For sure. Yeah. I think that the word bliss in like the bliss bean is such a nice way to describe it because it really is like a positive twist, but it's still quite relaxing. I'm not sure what the word for it is, but there's these like positivity influencers, right? Who it's nice that they're keeping it positive, but it's so much that it almost seems a bit superficial or forced, and just ingenuine, I guess, when they're like, you are the best it could ever be, and nothing will stand in your way. It's just like it's sweet, but it's not true. Yeah. So I like the whole idea of like the bliss bean because it's very real. It's like taking real things but trying to put a positive twist on them rather than everything is the best, you know?
And speaking of like trying to let my real personality show more in my content lately, I feel like that's been a part of it, is like my sense of humor oftentimes is pretty like sarcastic. I don't know, like I think some people take also like the negative what is it called, self-deprecating humor too far, but like my sense of humor is also sometimes a little self-deprecating, or like I find things annoying sometimes and I think that's funny, and I try to share that on Instagram as well. Like you can be positive about things, but also like just laugh when things go wrong and like make fun of yourself and be sarcastic and stuff like that.
For sure, exactly. Kind of in that note, in what ways do you think that social media affects our current society? This is the final question.
That's kind of what I'm studying in Communication Foundations class. The very first thing
Oh,
we did was
cool.
we read different articles about how social media and smartphone use affects teenagers' mental health. And now we're learning about mass society theory, which is like the perspective that media is dangerous and that it influences society as a whole and like brings down higher art forms or whatever. And for me, that was really interesting because I feel like I only ever hear media talked about in a negative light. Like, I thought that was just the default way to view it. And then to come into this class and like put a label to that kind of made me realize, oh, but there's other ways to look at media as well. And we were talking about like that documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma. And I feel like everyone was talking about that. Everyone like agreed with it and was seeing all these negative impacts of social media. And our teacher or our professor was like, yeah, that's an example of mass society theory. And I was like, oh, interesting. Like, we could also approach it from different lenses that aren't from a mass society theory perspective. So I guess I just have a more positive outlook of social media because of the like niche that I'm in, where I'm creating content that is very positive and based around personal development and self-improvement. So I see the from the content that I create and that I consume in the accounts that I choose to follow, like what a positive impact social media can have. But it also does worry me the other uses of social media that I see out there. Like, I was talking about this with a friend yesterday, how not too long ago, like, the older generations were judging our generation, and now I've gotten to the stage where I'm judging the younger generations for the way that they use social media.
So true. Oh,
it literally is always going to happen from generation to generation. Like, I look at the younger generation, and I'm like, oh my goodness, you guys are on your phones all day. You're on social media all day. Back when I was a kid, back when I was in middle school, we had email threads, and that's how me and my group of friends communicated. And we had a shared Google Doc for, like, song recommendations. Like, we were on the cusp of that, but we didn't really grow up with Snapchat and Instagram, and definitely not TikTok or anything like that. So I guess in my bubble of the internet, I see social media having a very positive influence on people, but I haven't ventured that much outside of the bubble. And I know that what I see is not the full picture. So
for sure,
I guess there's two sides to it, as there is to anything. I do have some worries about it.
Of course. Yeah. Something I literally talk about almost every episode, so for you guys who listen to them, I'm sorry to say this again, but I think what it comes down to is really just filtering your following on every platform, and also what platforms you choose to download and have an account on. It's just, I feel like there's ways that you can be intentional about it so that social media is such a good experience. And personally, I've seen such a switch in when I was like, you know what, maybe I should reconsider my following list. And when I did, it like completely flipped about just how the content I consumed, my outlook on things. It is crazy how this like word influencer, which I don't care for, but it's really true, because these people who I'm watching have honestly influenced things for me. I've like noticed just little things about like maybe what I find beauty in, or something I've tried, or lifestyle choices I've made that I relate back to like people who I watch on the internet. And I'm like, wow, that's so weird how they, through uploading content online, have influenced a decision I've made or something that I've, you know, pointed out. It's just such an interesting concept.
Yes. I think one thing that mass society theory doesn't consider is that we do have a lot of control over what we get from media. It's not like we're just powerless in media. Like, literally one of the basic assumptions of mass society theory we learned was that like the direct effects assumption or something. I think the other word for it was like hypodermic or something. Like, literally it injects those ideas into you. And it's like, well, yeah, but you can choose who you follow. Like, accounts with messages that you don't want to consume aren't just going to like be thrown in your face unless you like click on it and then the algorithm starts showing more of it to you.
Yeah.
And I also noticed a huge change in how Instagram affected me when I changed who I followed. Because, like, in high school, I followed a lot of people from high school just because they went to my high school. Like, literally no other reason. And that invites so much, like, FOMO and comparisonitis and all the negative things you can imagine. And then when I left high school and started my gap year, and I was like, I don't think I'm gonna talk to these people ever again, and I don't wanna see what they're up to because it only makes me feel bad about myself. I unfollowed so many people, kept only my closest friends and like the influencers that I followed, and it became such a positive experience. And I've taken that with me into college as well, because it's very easy, like in that stage where you're meeting everyone in the first few weeks, to be like, hey, let's exchange Instagrams, follow everyone who
Yeah,
goes to this
definitely.
school. And I've sort of been like, okay, slow down. Like, I don't know if I want to follow someone until I know that we're going to be friends and I actually want to see what's going on with their life. Because if I'm going through my Instagram stories and all I see every night is like everyone at the school and all the assorted parties that they're at, that's not going to make me feel good, you know? So I want to
Yeah,
see
definitely.
stuff from the people I genuinely care about.
Yeah, the we were talking about earlier me having like this second account for people who I know personally, and I considered saying this earlier, but I really don't like going on that account. I rarely do because I just follow anyone who I know, and then I see all these people from Colorado where I haven't been in 2 years, and I feel like I've experienced so much change and growth, and then you see the same stuff that you were dealing with then, and I'm just like, I'm so over this. Like I've completely moved on from this in my life. Like my personal life, but my online life, like I definitely want to separate from that stuff. So it's just
Absolutely.
all
I
so
saw some
weird.
stories from people in Wisconsin, which is where I'm from, and it was so bizarre. It was like, my life has changed so much. Like, I took 2 gap years. I have a YouTube channel now, which is like the focus of my life. I started college in Spain, and that just brought me, it just felt like it brought me back a few years. Like, not saying that I was at a bad point in my life or that Wisconsin is bad. Everything is great. It's just I've moved on from that and I want to stay like where I am. I don't want to be like
Yeah.
figuratively dragged back into that.
Totally, totally. Yeah, okay. Well, I feel like we could keep talking for a while about stuff revolving around this, but I'll bring it to an end. Guys, definitely go check out all of the Trice stuff. Her book, you guys can go order it now. It's out. You can go follow her Instagram, YouTube, listen to her podcast episodes. Lots of cool content on the Bliss Bean. Thank you so much for joining me today. This was very nice getting to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun, like discussing mass society theory and things like
Exactly.
that.
All right. Well, hopefully there will be a new podcast episode soon, guys. Have a nice rest of your day, everyone, and see you on episode 10. Ciao.